Excellence on Smart Innovations for Urban Climate and Energy, and the Department of, you abbreviated, Mechanics and Aero Engineering?
Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering.
Aerospace Engineering at the Arizona State University.
This is my very first public health conference, I should say. I represent a rather large grouping of people, including some public health officials, or as you can imagine. And I think this kind of subject is one that really cries out for interdisciplinary work. You know, it really needs people from all sorts of backgrounds, and I'm really interested to hear what other people are doing here. Anyway, I have a large cast, as you can see. In terms of disclosures, I put down we are receiving some funds from the CDC. I just realized I do have another disclosure, though. I'm wearing this tie that I just bought yesterday, the climate change tie from the expo over there. It's $30. So anyway, it's got a little polar bear on it on an ice floe. Yeah, anyway. So that's out in the open now.
Are you disclosing that it's a good tie or a bad?
Well, I'm letting you make that claim. Fill out the sheets later on. So now, to give some explanation in what we're trying to do, we're looking at the vulnerability, like I think all of us are, to extreme heat events. And naturally, there are a lot of factors involved, as everyone here knows. You know, there are climatic drivers, certainly, and we've already heard about some of those. There are socioeconomic factors, and we've heard a little bit about that, and I'll show some of our results as well. Urban morphology, we've heard a lot about that. In other words, how do, you know, the structures of buildings, how much pavement is around, all that. All right, that's what I mean by urban morphology. And the other thing that I will not be talking about today so much is about electrical power interruptions. And you can imagine as the temperature goes up and if the electricity goes out, that's a big problem. So, what's our objective here? The goal really is to provide the local, you know, let's say city or state level policymakers with some better understanding and, in fact, with some tools that they can use. And I'll talk more at the very end about the kind of tool that we're trying to develop, an online tool. So we're trying to identify, for example, what neighborhoods indeed have the greatest vulnerability to heat health, as we call it. In other words, to elevated temperatures. And, you know, the elevated temperatures could come from a variety of sources, one being UHI, that stands for Urban Heat Island. More on that in a moment. Heat waves, we all heard about, and the power interruptions you've already heard about, too. What are the characteristics of these neighborhoods, the socioeconomic variables and such? And then lastly, what can we do about it? What are the adaptation, response, and mitigation strategies? And we focused our study so far on two cities, by and large, and those are the cities of Chicago and Phoenix. We're, of course, located in the Phoenix area. Urban Heat Island. Okay. Probably everybody here already knows something about this, so I won't belabor the point. But the upper left-hand corner graph shows some temperatures measured in the Phoenix area. And the uppermost one are the temperatures measured about 50 miles from Phoenix. So in other words, it's a nearby rural area. And it shows the temperatures over the last 50 years. And the lower curve there in the dark blue, those are the temperatures measured at the airport in Phoenix. So that represents, say, the urban temperature. And you can see there's been some clear deviation between the two. I actually did it exactly backwards. The Phoenix temperature is the one that's on the top. All right? And so the Phoenix core temperatures are much higher than the surrounding rural temperatures, as you might expect. But of course, also the population is going up as well, another complicating factor. Now, the effect of urban heat island, at least in the desert arid region like where Phoenix is, it's really pronounced at nighttime. And shown here on the lower right-hand corner gives you an idea of how the temperature varies over locality within the city of Phoenix, roughly. The red curve is the temperature at 5 p.m., representing roughly the maximum temperature of the day. The blue curve is at 5 a.m., representing roughly the minimum temperature in the 24-hour period. And you can see, even in the middle of the city, the max temperature is, in fact, not necessarily higher than the surrounding desert temperature. Okay, but where you do see the effect is at night, or at the minimum temperature, where you see this big balloon in that minimum temperature. And in fact, a couple of years ago, the city of Phoenix recorded its all-time highest minimum temperature, and that was 96 degrees Fahrenheit. So for a 24-hour period, the minimum temperature was 96 degrees Fahrenheit. Luckily, I was out of town that day, turns out. But that's a problem. Clearly, that's a problem. So anyway, we've been able to do some fun things. One of them being fly around in a helicopter. At least our colleague Joby Carlson showing up there in that helicopter. And this is over the city of Chicago, as you might recognize. And so in addition to taking these sort of fisheye lens view of things, he's also gone up there with an IR camera and managed to take some IR footage, which can be quite striking. And these two images are the upper one is for the afternoon, the lower one is at nighttime, okay? And it's hard to get a lot of quantitative information from this kind of a flyover, but it just shows you that, of course, even at night, the buildings are still quite hot. That's the idea here. Social vulnerability. All right, so this is really more from my colleagues, Chris Boone and Chona's sister. But, you know, we're building on some study from Smoyer in 1998 about what are the characteristics of these places that make people vulnerable to heat-related emergencies. And so, specifically, we're addressing heat morbidity rather than mortality. And this is for the city of Chicago. And so what are the specific socioeconomic variables in those locations where people have a heat-related incident? Or in other words, there is a heat-related dispatch. There is an emergency call made, and someone has to come out in an ambulance to pick up somebody who is diagnosed with some kind of heat-related stress or illness. We've done a fair amount of GIS, graphical information systems. I think that's right. GIS type of analysis. Again, it's not me, it's my colleagues. This is for the city of Chicago, and it's showing the number of heat incidents in localities. And so each of those little red dots is, in fact, a heat incident. And you can see here the maximum or the highest density of these heat incidents is indeed into the downtown loop area, this downtown core area, shown here on the right-hand side. This is an ongoing study, by the way, so we haven't published these results yet. In fact, the analysis is continuing. But just to give you a flavor of the kinds of results we're trying to come up with, for instance, as was mentioned in a question earlier about the relationship between temperature and crime, okay? So we're trying to correlate these two variables. And so on the left-hand side, and actually the right-hand side too, it shows you at least graphically that kind of a correlation without getting into the numbers. The heat incidents, of course, are in the orange circles, and then the number of crime incidents are in the black or gray scale back behind it. And indeed, qualitatively, I think you can see some correlation here. So as another example, now looking at the effect of poverty on these heat-related incidents, and the R-squared variable in this case comes out about 0.34, but there are indeed a number of other predictors as well that we're in the process of looking at, and you can see them listed here. For instance, the population over 65 years of age, the elderly population, as you can imagine, is very important. But, you know, at this point, our preliminary findings are that there is indeed a strong correlation relatively with crime, but a somewhat weaker correlation with these other socioeconomic variables. You can combine a bunch of these variables together and of course, come up with a somewhat better predictor, but there, at least with respect to socioeconomics, there is no one sort of general model that we've found yet, anyway, that can predict heat-related dispatches. Now, moving on a little bit, and I've got kind of two sections remaining here. This is about the climate analysis. And again, the focus here is on Chicago, and this is sort of some of the same kind of stuff you've seen already. Again, though, we're talking about morbidity as opposed to mortality in this case. This shows you per year and the number of years we're looking at for our data, the highest single-day count of 87 in the year 2006 when there was indeed a severe heat wave. It's kind of interesting to break down the data and look at it in a little bit more detail. So, for example, day of week. Right? Who would have thought that Thursday is a good day to be out exercising or something like this? Because Thursdays, for some reason, there's the minimum number of these calls. All right, and we don't know why yet, to tell the truth. All right, but it seems to be a clear pattern. All right, this is less surprising. In terms of time of day, you get more calls in the later afternoon. That's when people are out. That's also when the temperature tends to be the highest. That's when the air conditioning load on a building is maximum. Or if you don't have air conditioning, that's when the temperature inside the building is going to be at its maximum. All right, so this is not so surprising. Now, this is also just kind of more of the same in a sense, and it's showing on one graph now the maximum temperature overlaid with the heat-related dispatches.
And what I'm getting up to is, in fact, kind of emphasizing a point made earlier by Audrey, is the nonlinear relationship between temperature and then heat-related dispatches in this case. Now, we've also gone ahead, in addition to just temperature, we also have looked at heat index as well. And, of course, heat index includes the effect of the relative humidity. Now, what we have not done, though, by the way, is look at the spatial variability of the temperature or of the heat index, like what was done in Montreal. We're talking about one temperature for the entire city. All right, so that we haven't gone that far. Now, when we plot the number of heat-related dispatches versus either heat index or temperature, we see kind of relationship like this. And just like was discussed earlier, there is indeed a threshold, more or less. So, you know, on this graph, if we talk about, say, temperature, which is given in the black, or the heat index given in the gray, roughly below about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, all right, you don't see much. But above 90 degrees, it starts to take off. So 90 degrees is roughly some kind of a threshold temperature or heat index. That's what this suggests. And so, indeed, there is a nonlinear relationship between temperature and the heat-related dispatches. The last thing. Now, we're putting together what we call an urban thermal model, and this is a very simple model, all right? And the idea is that we could calculate a single characteristic temperature that would represent the city's temperature, all right? And we do this through a fundamental energy balance of the city, and so we include, of course, incident sunlight, which is the main driver, as you might imagine. But there are a lot of heat loss mechanisms that are included, and they're shown here. For instance, heat loss to the air, to the sky, evaporation heat loss, heat conduction to the ground, and so on. All right. From this, we compute a single temperature, and we think that this has the most usefulness when we're talking about a comparative basis, and especially looking at different mitigation strategies. So, for example, if a city mayor has a limited budget to try to lower the city temperature, let's say you have the choice of either planting trees or painting the roofs white. Which one is going to give you the greatest reduction in city temperature? That's the kind of question we're trying to answer with this extremely simple model. And in fact, we've implemented a version of this model, extremely beta version, on the internet. And I'll get to that in a moment. So we also think that this model, it can be useful because not only does it calculate a temperature, but that temperature now can be tied to other impacts of temperature. And so one I've already mentioned, the number of heat-related dispatches, all right? That's what we would call there in the middle our public health model. So from the known correlation between heat-related dispatches and temperature, and using our model that can predict temperature, now we can actually predict heat-related dispatches. In fact, that's what we're working on right now. But that's not the only thing we hope to do with this. As you can see here, we'd like to do all sorts of things. And again, going back to my earlier point, this just cries out for interdisciplinary kind of work. It's clearly not one group, not one person, not one anybody can do all that. You know, we have to collaborate, and we're certainly open to collaborations in many, many fields. All right, last slide. This is the shameless plug for our website. There's no money involved, and it's a beta version. It's called heatwaves.org. All right, and this is being developed with some support from the CDC, a little bit. This model that I mentioned, it's actually on this resources menu, and it's an extremely rough-looking thing right now, so it won't be extremely helpful at the moment. And in fact, it's only for the city of Phoenix at the moment. Our goal, though, is to make it applicable to a lot of cities, at least in the U.S. or perhaps abroad as well. But anyway, this gives you a general idea of what we're trying to do. Thank you very much. Start over. Perhaps someone in the mental health side could answer that question better, I suspect. In fact, over here, there's... Great.
Are there studies that there are out there?
Thank you very much for that. I should disclose, I don't know her, by the way. She answered it very, very well. All right, yeah. In the back?
I was also wondering if you're thinking about just the city centers and where the population density is. Like you said, for health treatments there, it's hotter, it's usually lower SUS.
Lower, oh, I see, lower, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's true. I think I can really see the value now of actually trying to come up to define a local temperature rather than a citywide temperature. I agree, that's an important step. Audrey has a question. The question is, what's the input to the model? And so there are climatic inputs, of course, so say for the weather station kind of data. And then one also has to figure out, and this is the challenging part, is the urban fabric or the land cover. So how much of the city is pavement, how much is buildings, how much is roads, how much is vegetation? We do use a lot of satellite imagery to define those, and that's also ongoing work, and a lot of that is still not well defined for many cities. Yes, Barry? Actually, I'm not.
I mean, a lot of, as you can imagine, that's very variable. You know, when you do triage,
right.
To be able to come consideration, I'm just curious if you know what the criteria was.
No, that's a good question. I am not. Someone in the back, I think, a question. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, this one. That's good to know. I didn't know that. Yes?
What's your timeline?
Well, that's largely contingent upon funding. And so we do have some pending proposals in. Hopefully that'll answer that. So it'll go a lot faster if we have funding. It'll go forward no matter what, but it'll go faster with funding. Yeah. Over this side. Sorry.
That the model has a lot of potential for policy change. And I had heard a news report on the radio about, I'm not quite sure what the phase-in period is, but at some point the state of California will require white roofs on houses because of this very issue. And, so I think it's quite exciting with the implications.
Okay, well, thanks. The Lawrence Berkeley Lab especially has been really heading that work, so here in California. Yeah. The red, please.
I'm
Right, right. I should say we do have a pending proposal in the NASA too. So we are. I mean, certainly use of satellite data as much as possible is crucial, right?
Yeah.
I see. Great. Thanks.
Last question. I have one question and one comment. I really enjoyed the presentation.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for bringing it here. The question is, when you looked at health-related dispatches, did you control for power outages?
We did not.
Because oftentimes we have a sense of power outage, the homebound end up driving your EMS system, and they don't necessarily need to be transferred. If it is an incident, but it can also cue your data.
Well, interestingly, in parallel, we are looking at the electricity outages. What we haven't done yet is put the two together.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. Very good point.
The other comment that I wanted to make is that when working with heat, morbidity, and mortality, what needs to be considered is the acuity of the patient. I was an epidemiologist in a city that had extreme heat waves. And I would guess when the mayor's office said to me, how long after a heat warning do you expect the first death? And my response was, you had your first deaths when I told you in May that we were having our first heat wave. It didn't hit the level of a warning, but it was the first heat wave, and your weakest with high acuity of illness die off. And so, unless we consider the acuity of the patient, then we lose a whole realm of prevention. For example, you talk about crime, we would often find bodies in the house where the windows were nailed shut because they were afraid of crime and poverty because they're afraid of the air conditioner or the can. So if we could somehow measure that acuity, it could help us really target our prevention program.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Our last presentation is Norman King. He's with the Montreal Public Health Department, and he's going to be talking about some of the things that the health department's been doing.